Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey guys, it's Mark Striegel. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. I've been hosting this show since 2005 and producing it since 2005. And we still are plugging ahead here. Every week, every Tuesday, we bring you a new episode of Talking Metal. So here we go. It's Tuesday and it's Talking Metal. Today we are talking about one of my favorite bands, Iron Maiden. I know a lot of you guys love Maiden too. And yeah, we're talking about a specific record by them, Somewhere in Time. It is the sixth studio album by the band, released September 29th, 1986. And in the US alone, it has sold well over a million copies. I'm not sure what the worldwide totals on the record are. But yeah, I love this record, man, and it is a great record by one of my favorite bands of all time, for sure. So I don't want to chat too much here at the top, but I would like to say Paul Stanley, man, guy from one of my other favorite bands, he got COVID. We can hope that it is a mild case, although it didn't really strike me as being that mild. I can't say that I'm, you know, surprised. I really can't. I was scratching my head a little bit about why they were out there playing some indoor shows, and you know, I don't know that it makes a lot of sense to me, especially when you've been listening to Paul Stanley talk about his cautiousness and everything, and then suddenly Kiss's back out on tour before anyone. Well, not before anybody, but before most. So I'm hopeful that he gets well soon. I love Paul Stanley. I love Kiss. And you know, these bands, I mean, I've said this before, probably on the Mark Striegel podcast, but maybe here on Talking Metal too. I'm so on the fence about this. You know, there's a part of me that's just like, all right, we got to get things going. You know, I understand Delta variant, it's going up and, you know, people are getting sick. Some people are sadly dying. I get it. But on the flip side, like, we've been dealing with this forever now, man, since early 2020. I want to get my life back. I want to get concerts going again. There's part of me that thinks, yeah, Kiss shouldn't be out there playing during this, you know, potentially risking their lives and their fans' lives. But another part of me is like, yeah, it's time to do this. And if COVID isn't going to vanish, which it's not, you know, it's going to go down. Delta variant's going to go down, but then we're going to get another little spike, you know, and another one and another one. So we just got to start living our lives, guys. I don't know. I went out to a 5K race today. This is North Jersey. We've been in pretty good shape here with numbers, but hardly anyone wearing masks. I noticed somebody in a certain state in the South or something that sounds like, oh, well, no one wears masks here. Well, in New Jersey, everyone was wearing masks for a while, but you know, and part of me, like, I was just like, huh, should I be wearing my mask as I'm standing in line waiting for the race to start? And I didn't, you know, so I hope I don't regret that, but it was outdoors. And again, I'm on the fence. There's part of me that thinks, no, these bands should not be out there playing shows. And there's another part of me that's just like, okay, listen, we all, not all of us, but I personally did the right thing for a while. And I just don't know, man. I don't know. We can't keep living in fear at home. We get vaccinated, we do the right things, but we gotta get this thing going again, you know. I don't want my friends to die. Big shout out, by the way, to Jeremy Weltman over there in the UK who was vaccinated. He's a supporter of mine on Patreon, a guy I really, really like, and he came down with COVID and was sick. It sounds like he's still struggling with it a little bit. Luckily, he had the vaccine, so he's going to be fine in the long run, at least we hope. And Jeremy, please keep us posted on how you're doing. So without further ado, let's get into this discussion on the great record Somewhere in Time by Iron Maiden. And let's thank every patron that we have. You know, only a small handful of you guys joined me for this. I don't know if people weren't fans of this record or just didn't want to get on the Zoom call with me or whatever. Hear me talk about, you know, cut you off and interject my own comments. I get it. Maybe it's not that appealing to get on a Zoom call with Mark Striegel. But listen, next time, I hope more of you can join us. We will do this again. And I do want to give a shout out to the patrons, the people who make this show happen. We're trying to get 100 of you guys, and then I will deliver a bi-weekly video show. And that will be because we have 100 patrons. We are at 52 right now. We have Nick Beach, who just joined us. Nick, I remember your name. I know you've given some PayPal donations in the past. Definitely a familiar name. So anyways, thank you so much for joining us. Mrs. Metal Dan, Sam Warwick, Kado Yogava, Adrian Kuzik, Dane Damage, Madison Hatter, Seth B., Alan Janssen, Hank Reeves from Dash Vodka, my favorite vodka. That's Hank. Buy Dash Vodka, guys. John Simpson, Huckney Jacobson, John Barron, Ed Ferguson, Denny Striegel, Patrick Sabin, Jerry from Salt Lake City, Blue Walsh 21, Victor Guzman, Gene Eugene DX, Sean Richmond, Mario Charance, Andrew Miller, Jeremy Weltman, as I mentioned before. Jeremy, keep me posted on how you're doing. Chris Riley, Johan Erdestrom, Stephen Rodriguez, Tommy Anderson, Gregory Muse, Kenny McCrimmon, Leo Shaben, Brad Dahl, Dan Gerwan, Victor M. Ruiz, Jerry from Long Island, Sam Soupy, Drake, Matt Carroll, Joe Ryan, Jason Seth, Steven Saylor, Ron Keel, Jean-Francois Blah, Anthony Mackey, James Bennett, David Gray, Fred Rutz, Michael Street, Mike Jones, Steve Hoker, John Bouvari, and Metal Dan. Thanks, guys. Let's get into the episode and talk Iron Maiden. All right, guys, so let's get into our discussion on Somewhere in Time by Iron Maiden, featuring myself, Victor M. Ruiz, who has the Mars Attacks podcast and co-hosts the Mark Striegel podcast with me. He's a part of this discussion. We got Johan over in Sweden, Johan Erdestrom. We got Anthony Mackey. We got, who else? Andrew Miller up there in Canada. We got Sam Soupy in PA. Ed Ferguson, Kentucky, right, Ed? And yeah, man, some of these guys I go back a long way with, and it's so awesome that they are still a part of the Talking Metal family after all these years. Like Ed, I remember Ed from ages ago checking in with me back in the day. So anyways, here we are, all hanging out, all talking about Somewhere in Time by Iron Maiden. It was two separate Zoom calls. So what I'll do is I'll put kind of a sound effect in between the two Zoom calls to kind of differentiate between them. So it's one group of guys in the first round here, and then another group of guys in the second round. I guess the North American guys in the second round. So let's do it right now here on the Talking Metal podcast, Somewhere in Time, my friends, my supporters, my Patreon brothers talking Maiden with me.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel of Talking Metal, and what we're doing is another one of our Zoom calls where we talk about a classic record. The way we picked this record was the Patreon supporters on my Patreon page all voted, and they decided that we would talk about Somewhere in Time by Iron Maiden. I have to remember, guys, what were some of the other albums we voted on? I think it was it Ride the Lightning by...
Yeah, Defenders of the Faith, I believe, as well.
Yeah, and I'm Ride the Lightning by Metallica, Defenders of the Faith, and I can't remember what the other one was. Let me see if
Heaven
I can...
Heaven and Hell?
Yes, I think you're right. I think... Who said that, Victor?
No, it was Anthony.
Oh, Anthony, yes. Yeah, so those were the four records. So some really good contenders there, and I have to admit, I'm a little surprised Somewhere in Time won. Let's go to the polls here. Let me just, yeah. So those were the four. I have it up in front of me now. Ride the Lightning by Metallica received 7 votes. Somewhere in Time by Iron Maiden received 10 votes. Heaven and Hell by Black Sabbath, 8. And Defenders of the Faith by Judas Priest, a measly 3 votes. Now, all these records are super important for me. I'm trying to remember which one I voted for. I don't know. You know, Defenders was a big record for me because it really, really got me deep into Priest, that record, and made, you know, I was more of a casual Priest fan before that, but that really took me down a Priest rabbit hole. And with Somewhere in Time, for me, Maiden was just so prominent in my life at that point. When Somewhere in Time was released, it was almost like, I don't know, it was almost like it just another hit in the face by Maiden in a good way, but... You know, they were just so active during that time, and the Power Slave tour just went on and on and on. And I remember not being as excited to see them on the Somewhere in Time tour. Of course I went, but I remember not being quite as excited as I had been to see them on Power Slave. Why was that? I'm not sure, but it was almost like they had so much exposure in the 80s, and they'd come through my area of the world at least 3 times on the Power Slave tour, and I'd seen them twice on that tour. So when they came back through Somewhere in Time, buying a ticket, you know, in those days money was always tight for a teenager, but I'd seen them a couple times the year before, so I was really kind of wondering if I wanted to see them again. Of course I did, and scrounged enough money for a ticket, and I remember going to the show and just really being blown away, and sometimes in some ways even more so than Power Slave, because my expectations weren't as high as I feel like they were on the Power Slave tour. It was an interesting record because, you know, we'll get into this a little bit, but no Bruce Dickinson writing credit. And I do want to talk to you guys about that, because Bruce Dickinson had as much writing credits on Power Slave as Steve Harris did. So behind the scenes, we've heard stories that there was a struggle. I mean, at this point in history, 2021, we think of this as Steve Harris's band, but there was some reporting, and even I believe in the official Iron Maiden autobiography, there was kind of a power struggle going on there, where Bruce was maybe trying to become a little bit more dominant. And I feel like Steve kind of just pushed him back, and it was like, okay, we're not doing any Bruce songs on this record. So it was the beginning of a strained relationship between Steve Harris and Bruce Dickinson that I feel like they tried to rectify with the next record, the Seventh Son record. But it is interesting. No Bruce Dickinson songwriting credits on this record after he had such a prominent place on Power Slave. Anyways, I'm joined by some of my patrons today. I want to get right into a talk with Johan over in Sweden, who was just talking about the tradition they do over there every August where they eat crawfish, right, Johan, and drink vodka. So he's a little hungover right now, but... he is here to talk about Iron Maiden, Somewhere in Time. How are you, Johan?
I'm good, even though I had a little bit of hangover, but It's soon over. Yeah.
And you got your Iron Maiden t-shirt on there, the Somewhere in Time. That looks vintage. Is that from back in the day?
It's bought in the 15th of November, 1986 in Gothenburg.
Wow. Johan just held up his ticket stub. Wow, that is great. 1986. Wow. Is that the first time you saw Maiden?
Yeah, and my first big concert in Gothenburg.
Let's start there. What do you remember about this concert?
First of all, to see Maiden in Gothenburg is something that every rock, heavy metal maniac should do, because it's a special town. And Maiden is huge in Gothenburg still. And back then, when we came to Gothenburg, it was dark. Outside Scandinavium, the big ice rink, people were chanting Maiden, Maiden, Maiden. So, Powerslave made Maiden big, really big in Sweden. And this was, where they came back with Somewhere on Tour. It was like a triumph for them to come back. Still one of the loudest concerts. The audience was the loudest, one of the loudest audience I have ever heard still.
Wow. And were you fully into the record? Had you bought the record before the show? Did you know the record well?
Yeah, I got it for my 14th birthday at the 22nd of October. So I had a couple of weeks to learn the record. And it's a special record for me because kind of like Turbo and Afterburner, it's Maiden changed, like Priest changed and ZZ Top changed. And they went a little bit digital. And I liked it. It felt fresh. I love the artwork, of course, on the record. Perhaps one of Maiden's best or funniest artworks. And the Blade Runner feeling. The intro on the concert and...
It was an album lights. Cover you could just stare into, and you'd always seem to come across something else. But yeah, the Blade Runner vibe, but kind of nods back to Maiden history. You'd see in the lights and in the signs there. So yeah, wow, what a record! What an album cover art by Derek Riggs, the artist.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't know what you guys thought of it, but when you put the needle down on the first song and you heard that special sound of the guitar synthesizers on Caught Somewhere in Time, I loved it. And I still do. The same as the second song, Wasted Years, who is perhaps one of Maiden's absolute best songs, written by Adrian Smith. I also love the artwork on the EP of the Wasted Years. Same kind of artwork, futuristic.
Right. Yep. The single version. Yeah.
I don't know what you guys think, but Wasted Years is almost kind of not a Maiden song. It sounds different. I don't know if you agree, but there was something else there.
Yeah, there was a real hook, almost a commercial vibe to it. And Adrian Smith, the writer of that song, as you mentioned, who was kind of known as being of the bunch of a more commercial rock guy, if you will, that was what he grew up on, what he liked even before Maiden. He was in more of a commercial hard rock band. So yeah, I mean, what a great, great tune. And I mean, that unique guitar little thing that he does on the E string, which is, I've tried to learn that. It's much more complicated than it sounds. It's like five little opened E's. And then I think it's on it's the fifth note every time you fret it. But yeah, an amazing tune. One of Maiden's best tunes for sure. Stranger in a Strange Land, the other single off the record, also written by Adrian Smith. I love Deja Vu, more of a Maiden deep cut, a very rare Dave Murray written tune. On Wikipedia, it actually credits Dave Murray and Steve Harris for that song. For some reason, I always thought it was just Dave Murray. I have to go back to the original vinyl. I've noticed that a lot of times the original vinyl of a lot of these records doesn't list the songwriting credits the same as it does on Wikipedia for a lot of different bands. But anyways, yeah, great, great record. Heaven Can Wait too. I remember that in concert was such a strong point. I think that's where they brought out all the road crew and everyone on stage, and they would sing along with that. Yeah, great, great tune. Johan, you want to say something? Yeah.
Yeah, in Sweden, the only big music magazine called OK had a competition that five or six of the winners could go out during the, in Sweden we call it Stick, in Heaven Can Wait.
Right.
And sing the so I remember it well.
Yeah, yeah. What a hook on that tune. But yeah, again, such a great album. And another deep cut, The Loneliness of a Long Distance Runner, one that I would absolutely call a Maiden deep cut. You don't hear that one much anymore, but that started off side two. Johan, we can come back to you, but right now let's jump over to Anthony. Anthony, how are you, man?
Hi, good.
Remind us where you're checking in from.
Ireland.
Ireland, yes.
Hour or so outside Dublin.
Right. And is that the same time zone as Sweden or different?
I would think different.
Yeah.
We were probably an hour ahead.
Right on. Well, thank you for joining us, Anthony. No Anthony problem. Mackie here, a longtime supporter on Patreon. You're a Maiden fan. Where does this album rank for you?
This is a funny album. You know, it came out when Maiden Mania was, as you mentioned earlier, was at its peak, I would say. And like, we could not have been more hyped for an album at this point. You know, right. After, you know, listening to Life After Death for pretty solidly for a year or so. So the level of excitement around this album was huge, huge. You know, I think I was a little let down by the synth elements, and the guitar sounds were not good then, and they're still not good, which is a shame because the drums and the bass are recorded superbly. I think they're amazing.
There's a processed tone to the guitars that I hear, which... In that time frame, there was a device called the Rockman. I don't know if you're a musician, that Tom Scholz from Boston had invented. And it was called the Rockman. It was all the craze at that time. I don't know if they're using that on this record, but it sounds like it. And because it looked like a Walkman. It was this little device. And again, invented by Tom Scholz, and it really picked up popularity in the mid 80s. But it had that sound.
Like one of those little pods. Do you remember them? They were shaped like a guitar, and they had all these digital, like early digital.
Right. Effects. Yeah.
I would love to hear this album in the raw. You know, with none of that, because. Like the three, it's funny, the three tracks you mentioned earlier on are the three, my favorite three songs on this: Heaven Can Wait, Loneliness, and Deja Vu. Like you strip away the effects, they could be from Killers or something. They're very raw songs.
I loved Deja Vu. I used to just pick up that needle and lift it. As soon as the song would end, I'd lift it right back and play the song over and over again. It was such a great tune.
Yeah, it's great. So, yeah, there's so many sort of single note riffs on this album. Almost every song has its riffs are these single note riffs. And they're...
Wow, good observation, yeah.
So the whole album almost feels like one. It is quite difficult to break it up into songs, you know, because there's so much of that, you know, it's almost Lizzie in places, you know, without the harmonies. In fact, harmonically, it's quite straightforward and it's quite weak, but it's you know, I haven't listened to it in a long time, but I've listened to it 5 times this week.
Okay.
The first few times I was like, I'm not going to make it all the way through. The sound was just, I just couldn't get with the sound. But then by the third or fourth time, you kind of forget about the what's awful about it and you just really enjoy the songs. They're so good.
Right.
Especially
on.
Those three I mentioned, that they're fantastic.
Yeah, I love the opener too. Caught Somewhere in Time, I thought was just really great tune.
Yeah. Sea of Madness, ugh, no, I can live without that. And Alexander the Great, like, it's just hilarious to hear Bruce singing, to try to fit that in. It's like a They Might Be Giants song, but it's, you know, what they do, their kind of history lessons.
Right, yeah.
But it's such fun. Like, he's the king of Macedonia. Like, it's so funny.
Yeah. Well, they had it, even at this point in time, I mean, you know, 6 years in since their first record, they had kind of become the band that would give us little history lessons, you know, whether it was on literature or poetry. I was listening to Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner yesterday, actually, when I was on a working out on a jog, which is when I'm out jogging, I tend to really focus in on the lyrics and stuff when I'm working out. I don't know why, but those lyrics too, it almost gets a little ridiculous at times.
It works for me.
I mean, I love it. So Anthony, you're not saying this is Maiden's best work. What would Maiden's best work be in your mind? Killers?
Oh, no, I think Power Slave.
Okay.
I don't like use the word best. My favorite.
Your favorite, right?
Yeah, I think Power Slave. Yeah, or Numbered Beast. Like, you know, pretty predictable stuff, really.
And do you feel the record suffered by not having Bruce Dickinson involved with the songwriting?
In 86, I wouldn't have known.
Right.
I wouldn't have been able to tell. And I suppose even now, I can't really tell what Bruce brings to the table when he does write.
Yeah.
You know, I read the song on the, was it Book of Souls? So he wrote the whole song. He wrote the whole song.
I don't have that in front of me, but yeah, I take your word for it. Yeah.
But I don't know, like, does Bruce write on guitar or does he write on piano? I have no idea what he does.
He does play guitar, so I would think he writes on guitar, but that's a good question. I don't know. But he, even on the Power Slave tour, he played guitar. He played guitar on the song Revelations.
Right.
Yeah. So I remember seeing that tour, and that was the one song where they actually had three guitar players on stage at that time, you know, pre-Yannick, because Bruce during that song had a guitar wrapped around him and would play a little bit of guitar on that song.
Cool.
If my memory serves me correctly, which it doesn't always, but that's the way I remember it. Yeah.
I am a little jealous hearing you talk about the Power Slave tour, just visiting you 3 or 4 times, whereas in Ireland, we didn't get to see Maiden until No Prayer for the Dying.
Really?
No, I know. It was a real live one. Remember when they did that, a real live one, a real dead one? That was the tour that they finally came to Ireland. And it was quite a big deal.
Now,
it was the tour where Bruce had already announced he was leaving.
Right.
So he was on stage and he looked like he couldn't give a shite about the gig. You know,
really? Wow.
They're all in their stage gear and he's in a leather jacket. And but it was great anyway. Like, you know, it was such hype about Maiden finally playing Dublin that people
were... That surprises me that they didn't get there before then. But yeah. Wow. Wow. And we also have Victor Ruiz joining us on the call. Victor, how are you today?
I'm doing well.
Your mic sounds good as always. What does this record bring up in you? Emotions, thoughts, where were you in your Maiden fandom at this point in history? Were you deep into the band already? Like, let's talk about Somewhere in Time and how it relates to you personally.
Okay. So Somewhere in Time was the first Maiden album that I possessed in full. My cousin Gabriel, who
is usually on the chat and in on Patreon. He introduced this album. He brought it to my house and I taped it, of course. So this was the first Maiden album that I had heard in full at that point in time. I was in sixth grade, I believe. And then after this, I just dove headfirst into Maiden, got Live After Death and Peace of Mind and stuff like that. And instantly, of course, when I heard the album for the first time, a lot of the guitar synths and stuff like that that's been brought up, I didn't notice a difference, much like when Turbo came out by Priest. You know, I was just a kid just getting introduced to a lot of bands that weren't Kiss, basically. And as a result, you know, I didn't know any better. Of course, once you get Peace of Mind and then you start going back and putting pieces together, you're like, wow, sonically they sound so different. It's the same band, obviously, but the production is so different, where, you know, progressing, you listen to something like Power Slave. If you really listen to it, like with good speakers or a good set of headphones, it sounds like you're in the room with the band, especially with Nico's drums. With Somewhere in Time, I mean, it was fitting for that time if you look back and analyze it, because all of the bands were trying to be Van Halen or be, you know, other bands that were popular at the time. So they were trying to get that similar guitar sound. Or in Maiden's case, they didn't want to add keys, but they added them in their own way. You know, they did it through the guitar synths. So the album sounds different as a result, because they, I don't know if modernizing is the correct word or what exactly they wanted to do at the time. The album also has is kind of a big deal to me as well, because I remember the first time after I moved here to Spain and I was convinced to drive to Madrid by my future wife in a car that didn't have air conditioning, and we're there in 100 some odd degree weather. I'm flipping through radio stations in traffic, and I hear the opening to Caught Somewhere in Time come on, and I was like, holy shit, what's this? And my wife's like, what's going on? What's your problem? I'm like, this is Iron Maiden on radio. And not only that it was Iron Maiden, but it was Caught Somewhere in Time. Like, it wasn't Run to the Hills or Number of the Beast. So to me, that was a big deal. For me, I mean, my favorite tracks off of the album are the opener, I Love Sea of Madness. I know Anthony just said that it was one of his favorites, but there's just something with that song that I absolutely love. Deja Vu is such a great track as well. Loneliness, a Long Distance Runner, excuse me. Stranger in a Strange Land is a song that I've never been able to get into for whatever reason. I'll listen to it, but it's not one of those where I have to listen to it. You know, it doesn't have that sort of feel to it, but I really love the album. I know that you mentioned how this was kind of the crux for Bruce wanting to leave later on, but it's so interesting if you look at it, because there were three albums that came out after this. You know, yes. much to Anthony's point, that tour was after Fear of the Dark, and Fear of the Dark came out in what, 92, and Somewhere in Time came out in 86. So he still
late 86. Yeah.
6 years, you know, he spent 6 years bickering with the boss at his job until he basically said, all right, I've had it.
To me, Somewhere in Time, though, was the record where I think Harris really, and this is speculation on my part, but he kind of like laid the law down. Okay, this is my band. You know, Bruce brought some ideas to the table. It wasn't Maiden enough for Steve Harris. And there was definitely some power struggles behind the scenes there between those guys. And Bruce lost. I mean, he had not one, he brought songs to the table, but not one song ended up on the record. And we've heard reports that the next record, Seventh Son, some of those ideas on that record were actually the ideas that Bruce had brought to the table for Somewhere in Time and had been basically told that they were no good. And I mean, let's look, you know, the next record, 1, 2, 3, 4 songwriting credits for Bruce, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 for Steve Harris. But, you know, he was definitely kind of brought back to the table as a songwriter for sure on the next record. That's a good question for you guys. Which record's better in your opinion between those two, Somewhere in Time or Seventh Son of a Seventh Son? What do you think, Johan?
Ooh, I think Seventh Son of a Seventh Son.
Yeah.
It's Somewhere in Time. It has this magic feeling for me because of the first concert and so on, but Seventh Son of the Seventh Son is perhaps Maiden's best record.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Sometimes. Okay.
What do you think, Anthony?
I'm going to say Somewhere in Time. I Seventh Son never sat with me really, really well. I know I'm always the grumpy one here, but I you know, I liked it. It was out, but I never bought it. I never owned it. You know,
right.
I heard it everywhere.
Yeah.
Although we did it around the time we did the Killers. No, we did the Iron Maiden night for this. I was listening to a lot of Maiden, and I gave Seventh Son a good few runs at that time, and I really enjoyed it. So I don't know, but I think probably Somewhere in Time is. I prefer it more. It's not better. I prefer it more.
Right on. Victor?
Yeah, getting back to what Anthony said before, I prefer to use favorite as well, because there are too many opinionated people that want to lay down the absolute best. For me, Seventh Son is my favorite Maiden album as well. So I actually prefer the tracks and how the album is. I love the production on Seventh Son a lot more than Somewhere in Time. My biggest knock with Somewhere in Time is the production. It just doesn't sound sonically as good as all of the other albums that Martin Birch did with them for whatever reason. I don't know why, but I would take Seventh Son easily over Somewhere in Time because of that.
Right on, right on. All right. Well, we will wrap it up with you three guys now. And we're going to be joined by some other patrons in just a moment here. So stay tuned for that to continue the discussion on Somewhere in Time by Iron Maiden. You know, Victor, before we end here, I did just want to point out something that you kind of hinted at, I think, a little bit. You know, this was the mid-80s. Bands like Priest and Maiden, although they were definitely in some ways not embracing the what was coming out of America and the Sunset Strip and still trying to be their own, in some ways they were. And I mean, you could even argue the song Wasted Years with its hookiness, was that an influence, you know, that, okay, there's all these commercial hard rock bands coming out with hooks and choruses, and was that maybe a step towards trying to become more commercial, if you will, for Maiden? And even Bruce, do you remember his hair on this tour? I mean, he came out with the highlights, you know, and I think you were the one who pointed out to me that even AC/DC at this time, and this is around Fly in the Wall, that we saw them glam it up, not much, but a little bit, you know, just, you know, kind of fluff the hair out just a little bit. And of course, Priest is the one everyone always points at, because they even maybe took a little, the image and the synth sounds even a little further with Turbo, you know. But that's something to definitely make note of here, that Bruce's look, especially, he came out and he was blonde. You know, he had dyed his hair. He wasn't brown anymore. He was more blonde.
Yeah, the, I've always wondered if this was their attempt at the brown sound, if you will, if it was their attempt. Because Fly on the Wall, to me, I always felt like Angus was trying to pursue that whole Eddie Van Halen sound. He had the Floyd Rose and the SG. Ace Frehley had the Floyd Rose and the Les Pauls, you know, as you're saying, teased out hair. All of these bands kind of affronted what was going on in their own way. And even though Maiden and Priest were huge, they surely didn't want to get left behind, you know? So, I mean, I don't know, again, the transition between Seventh Son, or excuse me, from Somewhere in Time to Seventh Son, because that's kind of going back to more of a traditional thing for Maiden, although, you know, Can I Play With Madness, you could argue, is there. But also, Anthony brought up Thin Lizzy. Thin Lizzy was a big influence for them, obviously, and Lizzy was known for having these types of songs that maybe you could compare to, you know, Can I Play With Madness, or Wasted Years, or Years Later, Wicker Man, or things like that. You know, just short songs that, you know, they were hoping to get some sort of noise for their upcoming release.
I want to now kind of just throw it over to you guys. And Andrew, why don't we start with you? Where are you checking in from, Andrew? I know you're up in Canada. Can you tell me again exactly where in Canada?
Yeah, I'm in a place called Grand Bay, New Brunswick. I'm about an hour or so from the U.S. border with Maine.
Oh, from Maine. Okay, right, right. Yeah. I was, for some reason, I always picture you more further inland in Canada. But that, okay, so New Brunswick, Canada. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. Cool. And is that where you grew up, Andrew?
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah.
So let's talk about this record. Were you an Iron Maiden fan going into this record? When did you first hear this record? Any memories you can share, personal memories of this record?
Well, yeah, I've been an Iron Maiden fan, right? I discovered Killers when I was in high school, and then went back and got the first album and you know, the Women in Uniform EP and all that kind of stuff. And ever since that point, I followed them through. So I got this, I probably bought this, if not the day it showed up in the store, certainly the week it showed up in the store. You know, thinking about what you were saying about Wasted Years, I wonder if maybe what, you know, I hadn't thought about what you were saying, but it makes me wonder if maybe they were just a little bit influenced by, you know, the music at the time. You know, I don't know, like the beginnings of hair metal and stuff in 86 and whatnot. I don't know that. It's just a wild guess, but you know, it's not an overwhelming influence, but it, you know, now that you've put that in my head, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. And even the way they looked, like I said, I remember when Bruce came out and he had the blondish kind of, I remember there was this stuff called Sunin, and you used to spray it in your hair and it would actually fry your hair, but it would turn it blondish. Yeah. And I feel like that's what he was using for that, but that was probably what I was using. He probably had a professional do his, but yeah, even that was kind of something that I wouldn't have imagined the Number of the Beast era Bruce Dickinson doing, you know? So it was definitely an interesting time for them. And I don't know. I don't know. I mean, we saw Priest, we saw even AC/DC just ever so slightly, you know, their hair was done a little bit more on the Fly in the Wall tour, you know, so go ahead, Andrew.
Well, I was going to say, it's funny because, you know, getting ready for this, I listened to the album again and also I watched the video for, Stranger in a Strange Land, and my wife walked in the room and she said, I don't remember Bruce being so blonde. So again, yeah,
right.
You hit the nail right on the head. And you know, that actually, Stranger in a Strange Land is my favorite song from the album. Like, there's just something about the pace of it that I really like. And it's almost got a groove. I really like it. I like the whole album.
One of two singles off the record, Stranger in a Strange Land, both, I got to pull it up on Wikipedia, but I think both written by Adrian Smith. I think we said this earlier, but yeah, both written by Adrian Smith. So yep, yeah. What a prominent voice he became, you know, and we saw Bruce, I feel like, almost getting sidelined a bit on this record. Of course, his voice still was such an important part of the record, but as far as his ideas for the record, maybe not so much, but
Bruce has no co-writes on the record.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. Really crazy. And we're going to jump over to you, Sam. You're in Pennsylvania, right?
Yep. That's right.
And Eastern Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I'm up like 2 hours north of Philly.
And you're the one, I think, who originally told me to watch Mayor of Easttown, which was such a great show.
That was me, yeah.
Yeah, that was such a great show. Man, I loved that. HBO, this is off topic, but we just watched, what is it called? Like White Lotus or something?
How was that? I hear good things about it.
Yeah, it was excellent. It was excellent. That's really cool. Good. It takes place in Hawaii. But anyways, so yeah. Sam, what are your early memories of this record?
Well, to me, Somewhere in Time is all about, like, you know, where Maiden was at that point. Coming off of Power Slave and Live After Death, I mean, I discovered them right before Somewhere in Time. So it was like working backwards, you know, seeing the videos on MTV. I was a kid at the time. And, you know, so you see Run to the Hills, and they used to air the Live After Death video. So me and my brother bought all the records going backwards. So for us, Somewhere in Time was the first Maiden record that we were able to get as it came out. You know what I mean? Everything else we discovered after the fact.
Right.
So like, and you know, and back in those days, it was so cool because you didn't even know records were coming out. I mean, we knew it was coming out because we saw the video for Wasted Years on MTV, and it was like, whoa, new Maiden album coming out. This is great.
Well, I got a question for you. Sure. Knowing that you basically, this was your first Maiden experience, and then you said you went backwards. When you do remember the feelings you had when you went backwards and you heard like Number of the Beast or even a Killers, because those are different sounding records. I mean, were you like, oh wow, they were even better before, or they weren't as commercial? Do you remember any of the feelings you had about where they had been before Somewhere in Time?
You definitely knew Somewhere in Time was a different animal just based from Wasted Years. You know, there's nothing like that in the back catalog to that point. And right away you're like, whoa, it was a little poppy, a little bit of guitar synth coming into the picture, a little bit of that 80s sound, which at the time we didn't know it was the 80s sound. We just thought it was the sound.
Right.
Know, that's contemporary. Yeah. Like. So it wasn't like we were saying, oh, this is Iron Maiden taking on the 80s. It was just, hey, this is new Maiden, you know, but
right on.
We loved it, you know. And I remember, I'll never forget getting the tape because it had like this cool, like almost like a gatefold for a cassette. It like the whole cover opened up. You guys are nodding your heads. You know what I'm talking about. I think they had a couple that were like that. And the artwork was phenomenal. It had all the clues in it and all the little like Easter eggs for nerds to find and everything. And I don't know. To me, this record is occupies a special place for me because it was the first Maiden record that I got brand new, you know? And,
yeah. You know, did you see him on that tour, Sam?
No, I was too young, unfortunately, man. I wish I could have. I didn't catch him until Bruce came back into the band on the Brave New World tour. And I've seen every subsequent tour since then, but right on. I never caught them in the 80s. I wish I did, man. But, I saw videos from that tour and they looked amazing. You know, that Stranger in a Strange Land video was a nice performance video from this tour. But to me, the epics stand out on this. I mean, Heaven Can Wait on this album.
Yeah.
And how can you know, you can't do much better than that. I mean, you know, and even the song like Alexander the Great, I took that as like the next version of Rime of the Ancient Mariner almost, you know. It's another, not so much a literature lesson, but a history lesson and another Steve Harris epic. And I don't know, it was just all very, it just really sounded like Maiden to me, even though it was entrenched in the 80s a little more.
And a very rare Dave Murray song too, which we didn't get many songwriting
Deja Vu,
credits by him. Yep. And I will say that's one of my favorites off the record.
Great song.
Mentioned that earlier, but yeah, that is one of my favorites for sure. Yeah. Anything else on the record, Sam, you want to share?
Not that I could think of off the top of my head, just that I honestly think it was like the beginning of them going into this epic phase that they're in now, because, you know, after this record, you look at where they went with Seventh Son, then they pulled back a little bit. But when they did pull back, the band fell apart and Bruce left. So it was like, you wonder if they just kept going, would they be where they're at now anyway, with these, I mean, I think the new record, the last three songs are all over 10 minutes long. The one that's coming out next week.
Right.
I mean, the Maiden is just like total prog now, which I don't have a problem with. I love where they're at now. I think it's cool. And the more music, the better for me. But I do see Somewhere in Time as like a breaking off point. A lot of epic songs on this album, longer arrangements, longer intros, a lot more jamming and more instrumental passages, I think.
you know, it's neck and neck with Power Slave for me. However, I probably like Power Slave a little bit better. And that may just be because that was the first tour I got to see them on live twice.
And I saw
that tour. And it was just such a big part of my life, you know, Power Slave and that era of Maiden. It was just all consuming. And I admit it, even though I was just Maiden crazy, when Somewhere in Time came out, I was a little less excited about it coming out than I had been for Power Slave. And it was almost just like, I don't know. I was just like, yeah, just almost too much Maiden in my life.
I think Power Slave was like an early pinnacle for them. The Power Slave record, and then that tour that you saw, and then the live album. I feel like that was like mid 80s, like maybe Maiden Mach 1, like zenith, you know, like
right.
That was the high point.
Yeah.
That's, and then it just like, sort of, not that they went backwards or down, but it just got different after that, you know?
Yeah.
That's how I see this record.
And I always wondered if there was this strain within the band, you know, they hit that massive success that they had with Power Slave, and then suddenly they're fried. I mean, they've admitted that. And Bruce kind of gets sucker punched to the side, you know, and it's kind of like, I really feel like he was threatening to leave after that tour, but they let him do this concept, basically concept record. Seventh Son was the next record, which he was heavily involved with that whole thing. And yeah, it's just, it's interesting. So it definitely feels like a turning point in their career for me. And I think that's what you were bringing up there, Sam. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I want to jump over to Ed. Ed, remind me where you're checking in from.
From Lexington, Kentucky.
Yes, right on. How you guys doing in Kentucky?
We're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Kind of struggling through the same things everybody else is.
Yeah, I thought a lot
of people sick and in the hospital.
Yeah, I thought I saw the numbers in Kentucky. I thought they had started to turn and were actually coming down. So I hope that's the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I saw that same headline today.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to change every day, the news.
Yeah.
That's so true. It's hard to say.
Well, enough of that. Let's talk about something fun. And that is the Somewhere in Time record. You got it behind you there on the stand. I love how you always get the album set up. That's great, Ed. And for you, Ed, where were you when you discovered this record? Was it when it came out or was it after the fact?
Yeah, this came out when I was 16. So by this time I had spent
about the same age. How old are you?
Yeah, 51. I was born in 70.
Okay. So I was born 69.
Like 2 weeks after Heavy Metal's birthday.
Oh, okay.
So that's pretty cool.
What would that be? The first Black Sabbath record?
That's right. Yeah. Okay, I was born March 2nd, just a couple of weeks after that. Just in time for all the good stuff.
Yeah, right on.
So anyway, I had spent, you know, a couple of 2-3 years by this time discovering hard rock and metal bands, you know, building my own little music collection of cassette tapes, of course. I had that same cassette tape that Sam was talking about. And let's see. You know, the year before this, when I was 15, I was pretty much listening to Live After Death and Power Slave all the time. I think I listened to all of Maiden stuff pretty consistently. They were probably one of the biggest, or one of the bands I listened to the most, besides having recently discovered Metallica. I remember listening to Worldwide Live a lot by the Scorpions. That was a really big record at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
So I was listening to a mix of, you know, the hard rock and heavy metal bands, and at the same time beginning to discover thrash metal, Metallica and Anthrax and Agnostic Front, DRI, that kind of thing. So as you were talking about at the beginning of our conversation, not only Maiden, but, you know, a lot of bands beginning kind of late 84, especially in the 85 and 86, started to change their sound. Like you mentioned, the AC/DC going to Fly on the Wall, you know, that was a little less heavy, you know, than the records before it. Motley Crue kind of lost some of their heavy metal image and did the kind of bluesy or rocky thing, you know, with the ballad we had to hear 1,000 times on Theater of Pain.
Right. Yeah.
And I remember when I was 15, 16, and this record was about to be released, reading about it in the metal magazines back then, probably Hit Parader. And they were starting to talk about the keytars they would be using to produce the record.
Right. So I was synth tars or something. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was starting to feel a bit disillusioned to hearing that news. And I remember I probably bought that cassette the day that it came out and took it home and listened to it, put on, you know, you hear Caught Somewhere in Time and it's like, yeah, okay. That's a good song. Not as intense as what we've been enjoying throughout the years, but it's okay. Of course now, and then Wasted Years comes up and that song there is an excellent tune. The one thing that I think I do like about this record is there's a lot of good songs. It's Iron Maiden 3.0, but the songs were still good. I really love the guitar solo in Wasted Years. It kind of reminds me some of the guitar solo of Number of the Beast, the way they structured it.
Oh, okay.
And all of these songs are good, but, you know, it's just one of those records that kind of goes on that list of albums that I did enjoy or kind of learned to enjoy over time, but was just kind of disappointed in the change of sound. And also, if you'll remember that same month, Peace Sells by Megadeth came out. And then in October, Rain and Blood by Slayer. Wow. And I bought those records and was hearing those bands for the first time. And so I was quickly becoming kind of sick of what was happening in heavy metal. And in my search for something heavier, was moving on into thrash metal.
Thrashier sound.
That's sure. Right. Now, I did see this tour. Actually, I think this record was probably my first big arena show that I saw a major hard rock or metal band at.
Who opened? Do you remember?
Well, you know what? That's what I've been trying to remember. If you pull up the tour schedule.
When I saw them, it was Wasted. It was Pete Way from UFO's band Wasted. And they were quite good. I didn't know much about them at the time, but they were.
Was Pete Way with them, touring with them when you saw him?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, for some reason, I don't have a memory of who opened for, but I do remember going to the show. Actually, it was kind of funny because me and a friend of mine just jumped in the car and drove to Cincinnati. I'd never driven through a big city before. You know, I just had my license for a few months. And I had no clue where I was going. And I have a memory of driving around some part of Cincinnati asking 10 people how to get to the arena. But we finally made it there. Right. And I remember the show and I remember enjoying it. And I remember them bringing out those guitar synthesizers and playing those things. Yeah. And so I have a lot of nostalgic memories tied to this record. The songs being good helps. And actually, you know, a month ago, I kind of listened to all my records throughout the year and I put Somewhere in Time on and found myself singing those songs in my head for about a week. So I've found it growing on me even more as time has gone on.
Yeah. It's interesting with Maiden because hearing stories from you guys, I mean, this is an emotional connection that we have to this record and this band. And I've often been asked, what's your favorite band or bands? And the two that I always tend to lean towards, and there's so many bands I love. I love Led Zeppelin. I love Sabbath. I love Guns N' Roses. I love, David Bowie. I love Motley Crue, all AC/DC, all these bands. Van Halen are just amazing. But if you ask me what my favorite bands are, I usually say Kiss and Iron Maiden. And the thing that, you know, Kiss was not cool in the early 80s. And there was a few year period, maybe probably only like 2 or 3 years where I kind of stopped listening to Kiss because they just weren't considered cool anymore. And it's around that time that I kind of started getting into Maiden. And the thing that I think made Maiden so special is where I grew up in the Midwest. You would occasionally hear an Ozzy song on the radio. You would occasionally hear Van Halen on the radio, not occasionally, frequently. AC/DC got played on the radio. You know, later Motley Crue and Rat got their videos on MTV. Maiden was a band that could sell out arenas, but there was no support from FM radio or MTV. And it almost made it more sacred. The fact that it was a club that you were in or you were not in. There were no casual Maiden fans, you know, and I really think that that's helped that band, where we see bands like Judas Priest nowadays. Yeah, they kind of struggle to put people in seats in arenas. Whereas Maiden, I at least when they play around here, they play like, you know, three nights in the New Jersey, New York area, you know, within a couple months, and they're almost all sold out. You know,
this is what I was going to say, Mark, is that that hasn't changed. I mean, they never get support from radio. And now you don't even hear them on classic rock radio, like ever.
Right.
You put your local classic rock station on, if you listen to it for a day, you're going to hear 5 AC/DC songs, 5 Zeppelin songs, whatever. I'm not going to hear Maiden. Yeah.
You even hear more like amazing. Sabbath, for example, like mm-hmm. didn't really get on 80s, album rock radio that much. They would occasionally play Paranoid or something, but nowadays, you know, they are much more likely to play Sabbath than they would Maiden. You're totally right, Sam. And they don't. And yeah, it's, and I feel like in a weird way, Maiden has benefited from that, you know,
big time.
Yeah. I mean, and you'd think, well, you know, if they were on the radio, they would have reached more people, but no, it's made the fact that they're not a band that can have any casual fans. I feel like it makes their hardcore fans even that more rabid, if you will. So, one of my favorite bands of all time, for sure. I just, when I hear an album like Somewhere in Time, you know, I hear those songs and I just feel like, I'm home again. You know, it just feels so right to me always, you know, and I am an enormous fan of this record, as well as just about every Maiden album, but especially those ones that came out in the 80s. Just love those so, so much. Such great stuff. But any final thoughts, guys?
I would say I'm pretty fired up for the new record next week coming out.
Yeah.
Looking forward to 85 minutes of new Maiden music. Can't wait.
And
yep. I'm on the same page. Can't wait.
Yep.
We've heard that this is a diverse record, so I'm definitely very curious, for sure. And will you buy it on CD or vinyl? Do you guys
I'll buy it on CD.
Buy physical copies?
I'm still a CD guy. I know it's ridiculous at this point, but I got a wall full of them.
All right.
Kind of like Ed has there behind him. And it's my favorite way to get music. It still is. I'll still rip it into my hard drive and listen to it on my phone or whatever for on the go, but there's nothing like cranking up a CD
right on
stereo.
And Andrew, how about you?
Yeah, no, I'll order the CD or pick it up at the store, and I'll also download it off on my phone, so I have it in the car and stuff, but absolutely have a hard copy of it.
Right on. And Ed, it looks like you got CDs there on the one side and vinyl on the other, which are.
Yeah. I pretty much buy mostly, it depends on how much I like a record, what I'll spend on it. And with the you know, I've just not been much of a Maiden fan ever since Fear of the Dark.
Okay.
You know, by the time Fear of the Dark came out, I just wasn't listening to it anymore. It was all thrash and death metal by then. And I haven't really liked a lot of what they put out since then. You know, it's just a different sound. And so I'll put it on my Apple Music playlist and check it out, but I probably won't spend the money on it unless it tends to blow me away this time.
Right.
If I like it enough, I'll go get it. Yeah.
Right on. Right on. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for supporting me on Patreon and for talking Maiden with me tonight.
I enjoyed it.
And good cool, stuff. Man. Thank you, guys. And you guys all have Talking Metal t-shirts and stuff? Because if not, I'm happy to send those out to you.
I do. I got one. Thanks.
Yep. No, I do as well.
I do not.
Okay. Ed, if you shoot me your address and shirt size, I will get one out to you for sure.
I will wear it.
Yeah, cool. You can just write. How do we usually communicate? Is it through Patreon or?
I'll catch you on Facebook.
Okay, right on.